Welcome to the Space Show, Nick.
It's good to be talking to you, Andrew.
We're at the Sydney Observatory. It's been quite a hot climb up from the city, but we do have magnificent views of the harbour. And did they have anything to do with the reason the observatory was built on this site, Observatory Hill?
They certainly do. There is a very spectacular view from the observatory. The best place to get it from is from the top of the tower, the Time Ball Tower. The reason the observatory was put into this location was because of the Time Ball. I don't know if you noticed the Time Ball as you came into the observatory, Andrew, but that's the tower at the front of the observatory, and top of it there's a post with a very large black ball. And the idea of the ball, that it's raised to the top of the post at a given time, which is usually 1 o'clock, and exactly at 1 o'clock it's dropped down. And this was the signal that it's exactly 1 o'clock. And the reason the observatory is put in this location, because it's visible, the Time Ball is visible through most of Sydney Harbour. So ships in the harbour could know the exact time. 100 or more years ago, when the observatory was built, there's no other way to convey the exact time except with a visual time signal like a Time Ball. So the observatory was built largely to be able to convey the time to shipping in the harbour and through them to other people in Sydney.
So I presume there's some warning that this ball was going to be dropped so that ships would know to get ready to set their chronometers.
The usual practice is to raise the ball raise the ball just before 1 o'clock. We used to start raising it at 1:06. So it would have been at the top of the post for about 2 minutes before it was dropped. And then so anybody looking at it and seeing the ball at the top of the post would know it will be dropped very soon, and then it was dropped exactly at 1 o'clock. In the very early days, the observatory is actually dropped at midday, and it's an interesting question why they switched from midday to 1 o'clock. Nobody knows for sure, but there are a couple of theories. One of them was that the astronomy actually to make observations of the sun to find out when it was 12 noon. In those days, clocks weren't that good, so they have to make observations every day, and they used to observe the sun at its highest point to work out 12 noon. And then, of course, the astronomer couldn't be making the observation at 12 noon and running upstairs to the tower to drop the ball. It's a little bit much to expect from one person. It seems that's one of the reasons why the time for dropping the ball was moved to 1 o'clock. Another explanation is the ships had a change of watch at 12 noon, so it was very inconvenient to make a very major observation like the time ball at 12 noon. So 1 o'clock seemed to have been generally a much more suitable time.
So we've almost mentioned there, I was going to ask, how did the observatory know what the correct time was? Obviously the ships, their clocks weren't terribly accurate, and obviously before setting sea for several months you'd want to get your clock as accurate as possible, but how did the observatory itself know what the correct time was?
The observatory made astronomical observations, and that's why it was a full observatory and not just a place with a time ball, because it's there has to be an astronomer and an observatory and make observations during the day. The observations were of the sun, and it's basically the observation is working out when the sun is at its highest point, when it's what's technically known when it's transiting. And when it's at its transiting, tables give the exact times it should be transiting, so you make the observation when it actually does it to your clock, and then you see what the error is in your clock. Similarly, at night you can make similar observations with stars. You know certain well-observed stars, what time they are at their highest point, make the observation what they are according to your clock, and then from there you can work out the error in your clock. And then, so the observatory always had a very accurate time. Until very recently, this is how timekeeping was done, using observations of stars and the sun. So in other words, that means the timekeeping was done using the rotation of the Earth as the time standard. It's only in more recent years, in the last 30, 40 years, that that our time standards is not the rotation of the Earth, but it's more accurate time, atomic clocks, which keep time more accurately than the Earth itself.
Were any other observations done at the observatory besides timekeeping?
Yes, they were. I mean, that was obviously one of the more important reasons for setting up the observatory, but they did general astronomical research from the very early days. There was types of observation they made, anything sort of just happening in the sky. If there's an eclipse happening, they made observation of eclipses. If there were comets around, they made observations of comets. But they made more regular observations of things like double stars. Some stars, when you look at them through a telescope, are not single stars, but turn out to be double stars. And these stars move around each other over long periods of time. So it's important to keep observing sort of what position the stars are. And that was one of the regular activities of the observatory in the early days. It also was one of the main places for science in the state. So the government astronomer, the person in charge of the observatory, was the main science advisor to the government for most of the last century. And so there was not just astronomy down here, there was meteorology. The observatory set up a chain of meteorological stations throughout the state. They were sometimes on farms, I think later on they were at post offices, but the idea was to collect weather data from all over the state, and then eventually they were collated here, and by the late in the century they actually started issuing weather maps. They also started surveying the state, because again this is the main centre for science in the state, so the survey was started. Trigonometric survey of the state was started by the scientists at the observatory. Other observations they made tidal measurements, they set up tidal monitoring station, tidal monitoring station in Sydney Harbour at Fort Denison. So the whole host of observations, they made magnetic readings, so they did a whole range of seismological readings later on. The whole range of work was done here. Later on they started to concentrate more on astronomy. Eventually by early of this century, the function of meteorology was separated from the work of the observatory, and the Commonwealth Bureau of Meteorology was set up. So the concentration became mostly on astronomy. And the main work of the observatory was the International Astrographic Catalogue. This was a huge project started at a conference in Paris in 1887. And the idea of this conference was to survey the whole sky using photography from observatories throughout the world. And each observatory taking part in the project was allocated a large part of the sky. And then they had to take photographs using identical telescopes of their allocated part of the sky. And then they had to measure those photographs and publish the positions of the stars from those photographs. That was a huge project. Sydney Observatory started this project in 1890, and it went on until the 1960s. So I repeat that, from 1890 until 1960s, a project lasting for 70 years, over 70 years. So it's a huge project. Nobody would take on a project of that size anymore.
Where's the data from that stored now?
It has been published, and there are the catalogues have been published, and they're widely available. The plates itself used to be the original photographic plates used to be stored at Sydney Observatory, but they have been moved in recent years to Macquarie University. And those plates, and there's some like 20,000 plates went from Sydney Observatory, are a tremendous resource, because anybody is interested or has the resources to do so, they could remeasure those photographs, they could take new photographs of the sky, and by comparing those the old plates and the new one, you can get tremendous amount of information, very accurate information on the motion of stars, position of stars. And in many places in the world, this is actually being done. So the photographic plates from the Astrographic Catalogue project are really a fantastic resource, still available for astronomy, used in some places, but some places they're still available to be used.
Well, Nick, thanks for joining us tonight on The Space Show.
It's a pleasure talking to you, Andrew.